This episode is brought to you in part by your good local comic shop. Not the bad one, though. You have to go to the good shop because the bad one told me that they don't like me anymore. So go to the good one. Support them. Make sure that they get your money and they get your support. But most of all, use them as a resource. Let them show you cool new things that you never would have otherwise thought you would love.
I'm Willie D. Nelson from All Things Good and Nerdy, a pop culture podcast, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other tantalizingly geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, a show where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. I'm Chris, and today I'm really excited. I feel like I'm saying that a lot, but I am excited a lot because I'm having another new guest on here. This time we have Kevin Newbern on to look at X-Men Legends. Kevin, how are you today?
I am doing great today. Very excited to talk about this game.
Surprisingly, this and X-Men Legends 2 are the games that people were asking me about to come on for the most. Like, I would have sworn it would have been the Batman Arkham games or one of the Capcom fighters, but it was these two games.
I can see that. Just over the last week, I put up a couple things on social media about playing the game currently, a couple pictures and stuff like that, and it was very, very well received. Got lots and lots of likes and interaction on people talking about how great of a game this is. So it seems like a lot of people have really fond memories about this game.
I have a sneaking suspicion that it might also be because people like X-Men.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's and not only people like X-Men, but you're kind of at this point where everyone is really, really eager for Marvel/Disney to actually put out new X-Men content in movies and video games, because it feels like it's been such a long time since anything has really come out that I could definitely there's a pent up demand for it. So whenever you start talking about the older stuff, people get super jazzed.
So before we get talking about the game, which I promise everybody we'll get to eventually, you know, longtime listeners of the show knew that this was coming. We have to look at the comic history of stuff. And one of the things that I really like about this one is you've got a new kind of point of view character going. So they picked Magma because she was somebody that wasn't thrown out into a lot of the X-Men stuff before. And I think that was a nice move.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think I read this essentially the same thing about the development of the game, and it makes a ton of sense to start with a new undeveloped player that kind of the player at home can relate to and kind of envision themselves in this exact same scenario. I mean, that's one of the biggest appeals on the X-Men in period anyway, is there's so many people who relate to the X-Men, and having a character out there that you also can relate to because they're new, they just got their mutant powers, they don't know what's going on, it works perfectly for the game.
So for people who don't know, you can make a pretty good guess. Magma has lava powers. So she can go, she can control lava, and it's really cool. And she first appeared in New Mutants, one of the early numbers, I want to say 10 or under. That's not really that important.
I was going to say, that sounds right, but I'm so bad at pinpointing actual number issues. So, but yeah, she's an early on appearance in the New Mutants. Plenty of appearances through the New Mutants, but not like ever. I would never have classified her as like one of the core New Mutants or one of the main characters of that book or anything like that. But a character that comic book fans would be, you know, they would know who it is. But somebody who doesn't read comics, there's almost no way you would recognize Magma.
Which I love. But you also have a lot of heavy hitters in this one. You've got your Cyclops and Wolverine and Beast, as, you know, every single X-Men game has. pretty much. I actually think that they might be legally required to have Wolverine in every X-Men game.
I want to say, and I wish I remember this trivia factor, there is one X-Men game that does not have Wolverine in it, and I can't remember which one it is, but I'm almost positive that's like some weird random X-Men trivia I've heard before, that there's every other X-Men video game has had Wolverine except for one, and I can't remember which one.
Oh, now I'm going to spend the rest of the time trying to figure out which one it is.
Something to look up for afterwards.
But you've also got Emma Frost here being a playable character, which in this case automatically means you're a good guy. And I think that was a nice little touch too, because she's kind of been back and forth across the history of the comics.
Yeah, it's an interesting timeline of where kind of the X-Men were right around this. The game was in 2004, so I'm guessing, you know, development for a couple years before that. So you really come in right after Grant Morrison changed so much of the landscape of the X-Men. And this game acknowledges a lot of that with the fact that Emma Frost is a good guy in it. And also there's some things about the X-Mansion that I feel like are very Grant Morrison-y in this game. But then it also pulls a lot from the Ultimate series, which was going on and pretty popular at the time too. So it pulls from the comics a lot, and it's kind of just an interesting time. There was a lot of transition before this, and the game definitely acknowledges that while also acknowledging a lot of the X-Men history and a lot of their past. It's just, as someone who's a huge X-Men fan, like, and especially sitting down and playing this game this week and being reminded of how much this game refers back to the comics, it's a delight. This is a comic fan's dream of a video game. There's so much in it for a comic book fan. It's crazy.
So what got you into X-Men in the first place?
I have no idea.
Aren't those the best ones, though?
Growing up, I wasn't huge into comics, but I had some comics. Like, I collected G.I. Joe through a subscription through my school or something weird like that. And I had a couple other friends who also read comics at the time, and I would borrow theirs. I'd go over to their house, and sometimes we'd read comics. So I was familiar with a lot of the stuff that was going on, mostly at Marvel, because they collected Marvel, and so I knew what was going on there. And I just remember one summer being on vacation, going to a small little like mom and pop kind of 7-Eleven knockoff to get some candy and checking out the comic books. And I picked up an issue. It was X-Factor number 21. And that's volume one X-Factor because I'm super old. And so I picked that up and read it and was instantly hooked. And it's weird because that's an issue that's right in the middle of a storyline. And it's kind of hard to fathom, like, just jumping on right then. But I had enough knowledge of kind of what was going on with the X-Men from reading other comics of my friends that I knew enough of who the characters were. And from that point on, like, I went back the next day to that same shop while we were on vacation, and I looked for all the X-Factor they had and bought like two more X-Factor issues, none of them in a row, because, you know, it was like a 7-Eleven stand. But so after that, I was absolutely hooked on the X-Men, and I didn't have a ton of money growing up to buy comics all the time, but I tried to keep up with X-Factor as much as I could for the next 2 or 3 years. And that eventually led over to reading the main title too. And then when I finally, you know, turned 18 and got a real job, one of the first things I did with my money was set up a pull box at the comic book shop. And at that point on, I've been absolutely hooked since then.
Well, that's a nice little connection here, because half the reason I started the pull list at my shop was for the newer X-Factor.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, it's so amazing how when you hook on to one book and you're like, oh, I've got to have this. I need to make sure this is coming in every month. And so that was about it. It was at the time when I started the pull list, it was right around the time Avengers was relaunching with Kurt Busiek and George Perez. And I was absolutely all in on that book. So that's when I went to the comic book shop and set up the list, and that was it. My comic book collection since then, it went from maybe 100 books that I had before then that I'd collected through you know, all the long as I was a kid, but now it's thousands and thousands of comic books sitting out in my garage. It's ridiculous.
Well, I'm sure the kid loves that.
Yeah, my kids don't care about comics at all. It's terrible. my kid is he is 100% into like the Dogman books and like Captain Underpants. He loves those books, and he's a big reader, but the superhero comic stuff isn't a huge thing for him. He loves like the Plants vs. Zombies and some other things like that. There were some really good Skylander comic books that came out a few years ago. He loves all of that stuff, but his Marvel experiences all through the movies and through the TV shows and video games and stuff like that. And then whenever he wants to ask me, he just asks me about what happened in a comic book.
Well, one of the cool things about this game too is with the timeline, you had the first two X-Men movies had already come out. So you've got everybody having those in their brain. Even if they weren't reading comics, they at least were exposed to the ideas from those movies. So coming into this, it's not like you really had to have read comics to know anything about any of the characters.
No, not at all. And I was so surprised the way this story unfolds in the game, through kind of the new mutant finding their powers and being saved by the X-Men and learning and training with the X-Men. It's such a fantastic introduction to somebody who doesn't really know a lot about the X-Men, because you're through the point of view of this character that doesn't know what's going on. So everything's explained throughout the story. She gets introduced to the mansion, to the X-Jet. She meets each one of the mutants and they tell her their backstory and their powers and the big long introductions about who the Sentinels are and all of that stuff. It works so well as an introduction to the Marvel universe. This is just one of those things that there are some frustrating aspects to the actual gameplay of this game, but as far as the storyline and how they laid it out and how the actual structure of the game works, it's darn near perfect. It's really, really good. There's something for new X-Men fans, and there's a ton of stuff for longtime fans.
And it works in the context of how X-Men work in the comic universe, too, because they're always having new members come in, come out, leaving the team, or going to form off some little side team with people. So it's not like you've got one team like Fantastic Four where that's all it is. I know that's not true, but it pretty much is for normal people unlike us. But the X-Men always have new people.
And it's one of those, it's perfect because you get to choose your own X-Men team. It's only four characters, but you get to decide who the best guys are that you want to play with for the majority of the game. There's some things where you get shoehorned into some picks every once in a while, but you get to decide, hey, I really want to, Nightcrawler's got to be on my team. Or, you know, you can decide, I don't like Jean Grey. I do not want her anywhere near this team. So you get to pick who you want to be with. And that it dovetails into the comics so great because, yeah, in the comics, like you said, every couple years there's these massive roster changes. Every creator who comes in, every writer wants to set up their own team and do their own thing with the book. And this gives you kind of a little ability to do that yourself.
I wonder how many writers we can get to tell us what their team would be when they played this game.
Absolutely. My guess is it's an interesting thing because not only does it tell you a lot about which characters are your favorites, but there's some issues with this game where sometimes the character that's your favorite is just not someone you want to play with just because of the way that their powers work or the way that their moves are. So you'll learn a little bit about the person's video gaming style along with who their favorite X-Men are.
Well, we're going to try to figure out how to pull that off as we drop a few promos for some other shows.
That sounds perfect.
Hey, everybody, this is Paul.
And I'm Eric.
And we're the hosts of a podcast called Agents of Comic Book, which is, I guess I'd describe it as sort of like a book club meets movie week club type of thing.
Here each week, we'll take one comic book arc and one adaptation of that.
And we'll watch that alongside of it. For example, like we have done a Howard the Duck series where we read a Howard the Duck book and we went back and watched the Howard the Duck movie, which was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Not good interesting, but a pretty good musical number at the end.
Oh, definitely.
We've done an episode where we read a Venom book and went back and watched the Venom movie. Mm-hmm. We've done good movies too.
Oh yeah.
A few.
And so we do take requests as well, so if you ever want us to review a favorite book of yours and then watch an adaptation of that, maybe they made a movie about it or maybe they made a TV show about it, we do take requests as well for episodes as well.
We've got new episodes every Monday and you can usually jump in on any episode.
If you want to find our podcast, you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. We're Agents of Comic Book. If you want to find us on Twitter, we're also at Agents of Podcast on there if you want to see what we're reading ahead of time. But otherwise, if you want to hop on and read some comic books with us, you can join us every Monday. We'll be there.
See you then.
Hey, Christy, I had a few questions about a comic if you had a second.
Oh, sure. What comic?
Well, it's a big event crossover, Secret Wars.
Oh, that's a great one. Dr. Doom with godlike powers.
No, that's not the one.
Oh, you mean the older 1985 Secret Wars where the heroes and villains have to fight for the Beyonder?
No, that's not it either. It's, newer than that.
Maybe you mean Secret War, where the heroes try to overthrow Latveria.
What? No, this one has aliens.
Oh, I got it now. You mean Secret Invasion, with the green aliens called the Skrull?
No, the aliens weren't green.
There's no way. You mean Invasion? That isn't even by Marvel.
Look, we get it. Comic book crossovers are weird and confusing.
With complicated reading orders and lots of characters, even heroes no one has seen for years.
But that's why we're here.
We're Christy and Chris, and on our podcast, Chris's on Infinite Earths, we dive deep into the superhero world's big events and crossovers. We talk about improbable mountain lifting.
Superhero mommy issues.
Victorian space vampires.
And we always try to make it light and fun.
So join us every other Friday on Chris's on Infinite Earths.
The podcast where nothing will ever be the same.
Those are some great shows to check out, but first let's finish up with this one. So, Kevin, I want to throw something right out front. My copy of this game is in the storage unit, so I had to watch gameplay videos, and I hate that.
I lucked out that I am a little bit of a pack rat, and that I have kept pretty much every video game I've ever bought and every console I've ever bought. So I still have them lined up. I mentioned off show that my son is a big gamer and he really appreciates kind of the history of video games. So he likes to, every once in a while we fire up the PlayStation 2 and he plays some Sly Cooper. Or when the new Kingdom Hearts came out, he wanted to play the first Kingdom Hearts. So we'll break out the PlayStation every once in a while to do that. Or, September 9th is always the anniversary of the Dreamcast. So we're playing some Dreamcast that day. So I just kind of lucked out that this was really easy for me to pop in. I still got the game and was ready to go. So I've been playing it a little bit every week or every night of this week.
I'm going to assume that you were not playing the N-Gage version.
No. I love that there's an N-Gage version of this. That is the weirdest, most random nonsense and kind of a great a little bubble of what life was like in 2004 that there's a port of this game on the weird taco-shaped video game phone.
And really, that's all we need to say about it because I didn't look at it either. I watched some gameplay footage just to say that I did.
Yeah, from what I understand, that version they tried to stick with the same storyline and everything, but the graphics, they just couldn't run that same engine. So from what I understand, the playability of the game is really not great. Maybe it is. For 2004, it might have been mind-blowing. I never played it back then. But yeah, from everything that I understand, that port isn't fantastic.
Well, for people who actually like playing on systems that didn't flop, this also came out on GameCube, PS2, and Xbox.
Yeah, this was definitely a big release for Activision at the time, where this got as much coverage as anything. This wasn't exclusive like Marvel Universe 3 or Ultimate Alliance 3 that just came out, where it was only where it was exclusive to the Switch. This had a big wide release. I had friends that had this game on the Xbox. It definitely had obviously they made sequels to it. It was a good seller, and it was a pretty popular game at the time.
So the way this game is set up is might be a little weird for some people. It is like a Baldur's Gate style dungeon crawling action RPG, which does mean though you get to have four people playing at the same time, which obviously worked a little better on GameCube and Xbox than PS2, but you could still do it there.
I had the Duo Tap or whatever they called it at the time, and I had five controllers for my PlayStation for soccer video games. So I was playing this when four players with my friends. They'd all come over and we'd sit there and play this till 2 a.m. It's a great game for playing with your friends because the AI is just god awful. So the difference between having a team of four X-Men that are actually human controlled and a team of just you and the computer just running around like crazy people is night and day. It's a much better game if you can sit there and play it with your friends. It's a lot of fun as far as multiplayers go, and that's obviously kind of a dying breed of game these days. Everything's online, so there's very few games where you actually get to sit down and play with people in the same room. This was a perfect example of how much fun that could be.
So why don't you take us a little bit through the story of this one, since you got to play it and I had to suffer through YouTube.
No problem. The story is, if you've read any X-Men or watched any X-Men movies or anything like that, it's a story that feels extremely comfortable, I guess is maybe the best word to describe it. Like it doesn't do anything extra. It doesn't really add anything to X-Men lore that doesn't already exist. You start out as the main character, Magma, who discovers her powers and is immediately, there's a mob attacking her right away. And, the X-Men zap in, and immediately you start the game just as single player mode as Wolverine, and you save her from the Blob and the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, who've taken her because they have their own agenda as to what mutants should be. And that introduces the X-Men introduces Magma into the X-Men, and from that point on you're sort of unraveling what really isn't a big mystery, but ends up being a kind of a twofer combo on big bosses of Magneto and the Sentinels. You start getting introduced to what the Sentinels are and how they're hunting down mutants. And over the game, there's several different levels that you go to where you're uncovering it feels like a mystery, but it's not really a mystery. You know where that game is going when you're playing it. I think anyone who's even seen the movies kind of understands where things are going. You defeat Magneto, and then you get to defeat the Sentinel Master Mold, and everything's hunky-dory by the end of the game. And along the way, as you play the game, characters that you meet throughout the series get unlocked. So when you start the game, you only have four or five characters available to you. Well, you start with just Wolverine, but you start getting Cyclops is introduced, so you can have two player, and then you get to four player mode. And as you play, the more characters are introduced. And also as you play, the real fun part of this game and the treat for anybody that's a big comic book fan is you are introduced to so many things in the Marvel universe or at least in the X-Men universe that are in the comics through the game. You go to Muir Island. That's not a big thing, but you go to the HARP facility up in Antarctic. There's a level that's all in the streets of New York. So it feels very much like this game is set in the Marvel universe.
Having so many characters that you can play as, really, it's good in the sense that you can make the team however you want. You can go through and play a team that actually existed. You can make your own. It's bad in the part where there are some parts of levels where you have to have a certain character.
Yeah, absolutely. There are, I remember, I forgot how frustrating that was until I started playing the game again, because this is one of those games, it is pre-autosave, so there are specific save points in this game, and in different levels, they can be very far away from each other. And the save points are also where you can change your team. So you can be an hour into a level and get to an obstacle that you absolutely need Iceman for, or you absolutely need Nightcrawler for. Those are like the two most common guys you need on your team. And so you've got to then backtrack a huge amount of time. Well, huge amount of time. When you're not fighting anyone, walking for 4 minutes in a video game seems excruciating. So you've got to go back to change out your team and then go back to where you were. And that's definitely one of the gameplay aspects of this game. As this series goes on to X-Men 2 and then also to the Ultimate Alliance games, they kind of fix that mechanic in the game, but in this particular version of the game, it can be pretty frustrating.
It's definitely understandable too to have something in the first game where, you know, it's not gonna be perfect coming right out of the gate.
Well, and there's aspects of that do make it fun. The ability to wear, oh, hey, I'm playing as Iceman and I can create an ice bridge, or I'm playing as Nightcrawler and I get to teleport into this cell. Like, actually using the character's mutant powers to progress the story and to do more than just beat up the bad guys is a lot of fun, and it's a great aspect of the game. It's just a matter of the way it's implemented is kind of clunky. It's not the most elegant kind of design that they could have used. It feels real rewarding when you're doing it, but if you messed up your loadout, if you messed up your team, then it can be a real frustrating aspect of this game.
Yeah, and something else you can mess up too is those skill points you get as you level up. I mean, if you're not careful enough, then you don't really have a good power. You just have a lot of powers that are all right.
You definitely have to kind of, it reminds me so much, and this one of the reasons why I probably like this game, it reminds me a lot of Diablo, especially Diablo 2, but still also Diablo 3. In that if there are powers and there are moves in this game that are very, very helpful, and there are ones that aren't. And if you don't manage your, if you don't manage the RPG aspects of this game, if you don't allocate those power points to the right things or those skill points to the right moves, you definitely are at a big disadvantage playing the game all the way through. But that's also one of the fun things about this game. Frustrating when you're playing with four players, as someone wants to spend 10 minutes trying to configure their guy specifically. I remember this game very vividly. I remember a lot of arguments with my friends while we were playing this game four player, because everyone, when they level up, wants to redistribute their skill points. And you're like, hey, I'm playing this game. Let's keep going. Come on. Stop messing around. But it's definitely one of the more fun aspects of the game is that customization.
Yeah, and you have a lot of appearances from other people too who you don't get to play as. Moira McTaggart shows up, Multiple Man and Bishop and Magic show up. There's other people as well. Angel was cut from the final build, but at least there was a thought of having him in there.
Well, and I should have mentioned too, when we were talking about the story, the game specifically, this was something I didn't know at the time and realized, you know, just in prep for this. The guys from, if anyone's familiar with the team of Man of Action, they are a group of comic book writers that have worked on a lot of Hollywood properties, like Big Hero 6 and Ben 10, I want to say. I always see these guys at conventions all the time. They worked on this game on doing the storyline and the plot line, and all four of those guys have experience writing X-Men comics, if I'm correct. Joe Casey, Joe Kelly, Steven Seagal, Duncan Rouleau, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing names right there. Those guys all have worked on X-Men at a certain point in time, and so it's clear that these guys understand the X-Men universe. You know, when Forge is brought in, when Moira McTaggart is brought in, like, those characters all add to the game. it encapsulates so much of the X-Men more than just the 16 guys you get to play with. You could say in this game that the Avengers Mansion, that the X-Mansion is a whole character in this game. Like, you're going from room to room to the library in the X-Mansion, checking out comic books off the bookshelf, or loading danger room simulations and stuff like that. Like, it brings in so much of what we're familiar with in the X-Men comics into the video game, more than just on the gameplay. It's incredible. That's why it's one of those things where I was telling you about. If you're a comic book fan, this game is just made for you.
And with me going through the YouTube gameplay videos here, I saw mixed reviews on like the actual gameplay, and honestly, I could tell that a lot of that was because it was people who weren't old enough to have played this when it comes out or anything like it. But also mixed reviews from like the comic aspect of it. And mostly the bad ones you could tell were people that just, they don't care about the comic stuff at all. They're just looking at the game because it's a popular game.
And it's definitely like, I totally get that. There are levels of this game. There are inside levels and outside levels. And a lot of the inside levels, when you're in a nuclear base or something like that, and you're fighting different guys inside, you're always moving room to room, and every single doorway is a choke point. And the AI in this game is so terrible that you will lose and people will die just sitting there at a doorway like dummies. Like, it really, that part of the gameplay is really, really frustrating, and it comes up a lot. So I can see if you're used to a very comparable game, if you're used to the new Avengers game, that, and you're used to these big open worlds and these big, huge levels, and the way that those play out, whereas this game has really kind of a narrow scope to it, even though you see a lot in the game, your actual gameplay sections are pretty narrow and controlled for you. I could see a lot of frustration over the gameplay aspect of that. There's no block button in this, unless I was completely missing something, which is a huge thing, because the power-ups and health things are not very common in this game until you get a little bit further in and you could buy some of that stuff. So there's some parts of this game that make it very, very challenging. I mentioned that the save points are super far away. So if you sit down and you want to play this game, you better budget in an hour because otherwise you don't get to a save point and you waste all of the progress that you made. It's so comparable to a lot of modern games. There's a lot of clunkiness to this game that I could see a newer gamer being really frustrated with. There's also a lot of levels where there's a lot of places in between levels where you're just walking for really long periods of time and looking for different things around the mansion or around the X-Jet hangar and stuff like that. And so those things aren't super exciting. And if you're not obsessive in your collectability, or if you're unlocking 100% of a game, like, that stuff could be really, really frustrating.
And from my understanding too, I know for sure Beast I heard this about, but I'm sure there are other characters where you've got your one chance to unlock them, and if you don't, you're kind of stuck.
I haven't come across that yet, but that sounds correct. Because there are levels in this that, if I remember correctly, only come up once. And like, if you don't get the comic book that's on that level, that's hidden up in some corner, like, that was your only chance to get that. And a lot of this game, you know, a lot of the fun of it from a geek perspective is collecting all of those things, the comic book art covers and danger room missions and stuff like that. So if you miss that stuff in one level, you can't always go back to every level. And so, yeah, that kind of stuff can be it's not ideal.
Thankfully for me, I'm not a completionist with that kind of thing, so I'd be okay.
When playing this game with my friends, that was honestly the biggest arguments we always had were, hey, we haven't looked in this corner yet, or we haven't looked over here, or let's look at the guidebook to make sure we hadn't missed anything, where some of us just literally wanted to play the game and just beat up the bad guys as quickly as possible. So there's a little bit of conflict there, depending on how you want to play the game.
Well, I know if it's getting played in my house, it's going to have to be single player because my wife won't play with me. Not this kind of game, anyway.
Mine won't either. My son, he was like, I will play one level with you per night. And then he bailed on that pretty quick. Because like I mentioned, the levels are so long. Some of the games he loves, like he's playing like the Lego Avengers games right now, or the Lego Marvel Superheroes. And a lot of those games have shorter levels. And so I don't think he's quite used to having to sit there and grind away for a couple hours on a level to make sure you actually get everything and complete everything.
We're both old. We're used to that.
Yes and no. I think I've gotten a little... That was in the playthrough on this and going back and re-looking at this game. Those were the parts where I was most frustrated with. Like, I couldn't believe how long it takes to save a game. Like, you absolutely take that for granted that games just save in the background as you're playing them now, instead of sitting there for a whole, 20 seconds while the game just sits there and spins. Like, oh, that's excruciating now. And like I'd mentioned, those levels where sometimes you're just walking around looking for a save point after you've beaten everything. That stuff's really frustrating in comparison to a modern game. It feels so old and so antique-y. The graphics of this game don't look bad. That's the one thing I was actually the most impressed with and surprised going back and playing it again, because I really expected it to not hold up. I expected to just not love this game graphically. But the actual gameplay on the game is really good. It looks good. It's nice to the eyes. The colors are all great. It's relatively sharp. It uses that cell shading technique that was just kind of new for that time, that like Jet Grind Radio used. And the full motion video also, there's some pre-rendered cutscenes in the game that I was really surprised looked as good as they did, because I just assumed 2004 it's going to look like garbage. But they looked really, really nice. The issue with this game, where it really falls down, where that cell shading technique doesn't look good, is whenever they zoom in on a character. This game has pre-rendered cutscenes, and the game also has cutscenes that are generated live via the game engine, and those scenes look terrible, because when you take the graphics that this game has with the cell shading it uses and you zoom in on the characters, they look awful. They all have mitten hands. None of them have individual fingers. Most of their faces don't have any detail. It's tiny little dots for eyes and a slit for a mouth. And so it really doesn't hold up in certain aspects of the game. But for the most part, this is a really enjoyable game that could very easily be, get a high def port and still look nice today. I mean, no one's going to mistake this for a modern game, but it's not one of those games where, maybe you look back on the some of those early PlayStation games and the graphics on them are super, super clunky. Or if you've ever fired up Star Fox 64, like, it looks terrible. But this game looks really nice. Like, it still holds up. For what it is, it holds up really well.
So compared to the X-Men universe, what does this game really get wrong?
It's hard to say a lot of aspects of where the game gets something wrong, because the game gets so many things right. It's a weird mix in that, especially if you read the comics, almost all of the costumes for the characters in this game are pulled from Ultimate X-Men. But the storyline of the video of the game and all the characters you meet and all the history on everything is from the main X-Men universe. It's not the Ultimate universe. There's a part of this game where there's a trivia contest in this game where you can just answer trivia questions for bonus XP, which is super, super fun. But all of the trivia, none of it has to do with the Ultimate universe, but all the characters look like the Ultimate universe. So it's a little bit weird as far as that goes. I've read and heard some people who talk about some of the voice acting on this game, which is kind of weird because Charles Xavier is played by Patrick Stewart for the voice acting in this game, which I didn't remember at all and was blown away when he started talking. The voice acting, I think, for the rest of the characters is really, really average and mediocre. Jubilee, at one point, it almost sounds like she has a southern accent. So some of those things don't really quite track with me as far as how the voice acting was. It was competent, but in my head, like, all of these characters sound like they do in the X-Men cartoon. And so it's way, way off from that. Like, a lot of these guys aren't even close to that. So for me, that's one of the aspects where it kind of falls short. You could also make a very good argument that this game doesn't spend enough time discussing the mutant metaphor. When we talk about the metaphor for mutants in the Marvel Universe being kind of analogous to racism or to homophobia or to sexism or any of those types of things, this game doesn't focus on that a lot. You do find out that the X-Men are hunted and the X-Men are hated, but they really, really gloss over a lot of that stuff. So if you're looking for a real in-depth, like, meaty plot to this game, there isn't one. It's a really nice introduction to the X-Men. It hits all of the, you know, it plays the greatest hits as far as the guys you're fighting, but the plot doesn't really have any heft to it. There's no gravitas that maybe you would expect from, you know, a comic book series that, you know, most famous plot lines are things like the Dark Phoenix saga and stuff like that. It doesn't really get to those it doesn't ever achieve those heights. And there's a couple characters also too where just they kind of miss a little bit on the background, and I don't blame them for that. Like, I don't think any video game wants to sit there and explain how the Phoenix Force relates to Jean Grey, so they kind of take the movie view of things, and they just say that the Phoenix is a power that Jean Grey has inside when she gets angry. So there's some aspects like that where it falls a little bit short, but this game definitely gets more right than it gets wrong. Way, way more right than it gets wrong.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that they definitely go for a wide aspect instead of a deep aspect there is really the main thing that I was running across too, because there's so many little nuanced details you can get in with X-Men. And I mean, granted, for a game, there's only so much you can get into too.
Yeah, it's exactly. I mean, it's a game. You want to be. It's a beat 'em up. It's essentially a dungeon crawler. It's you. Like I said, really, kind of some of the most frustrating aspects of the game really do revolve around to when things get really, really slow and you're not in the actual fights. You're doing other stuff that's around the fights or in between the fights. So adding more to that wouldn't have probably been a good idea. It would have taken away from the game, but as far as, like I said, being an introduction to the X-Men or bringing on all these callbacks for older X-Men fans, man, it hits so much on that. It really, you know, all A's across the board as far as tailoring itself to a current X-Men fan.
Really, I'm just going to pretend like I already asked you what it got right, because those answers got mixed in a lot anyway.
Yeah, sorry, but it
happens. Well,
like I mentioned the trivia game portion of this. That's insane to me that it, because it has this trivia aspect to the game where it's just a little hub that you go to, and for every trivia question, they're just multiple choice questions. For every trivia question you get right, you get like 6 experience points. I don't even think that means anything in the game. It doesn't really impact your character that much, but it is, it's literal trivia from the game, and it's, some of them are deep cuts. A lot of it is, I think they wrote the trivia aspects so that if you pay attention to the game and you go through every bit of dialogue and you go through every little thing in this game, you can answer those trivia questions. But, you know, I wasn't doing that. I just started going through and answering the trivia questions. And it's stuff like, you know, what's the name of Moira McTaggart's son? You know, Proteus isn't in this game at any point in time, unless I'm wildly misremembering something. But also, like which Native American tribe is Forge a part of, what year and month did the first X-Men comic book come out. It talks all, you know, there's a ton of trivia questions about Wolverine. Why can't Cyclops focus his laser blast because of a head trauma as a child? Like, those are really, really deep cuts in X-Men lore. And the fact that this game finds a place to put those is incredible. It's just, it's so much fun. I've had a blast kind of exploring those aspects of this game, downloading the cover art and all of that kind of stuff, more than I do just grinding away at the levels.
And really, X-Men isn't all fighting and stuff anyway, even in the comics. So the fact that they can find a way to slip all this in, it totally feels just like an X-Men story.
Like I said, you get this full tour of the X-Mansion that seems absolutely insane in the level of detail that they put into different things. You can go to the X-Mansion and you go upstairs and you can see everyone's rooms, and you can pretty much tell whose rooms those are by the stuff that's in the room. Like, Jubilee's room looks really girly and there's a lot of pink in it. I think it's Wolverine's room has like some bikini poster ladies up on the walls. Like, stuff like that is, it throws in it so much detail in the game that is for the X fan that it's just, I couldn't believe in going through and replaying this game how much they can include in that.
And I feel like this might be the dumbest thing I've ever asked you, but if you know somebody who wants to get into X-Men, would you give them this game as a bit of a primer course?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's so perfect for that. Like, I'm surprised that I don't know exactly how you would judge this. They always talk about this when a movie comes out as to whether or not it will increase comic book sales or it will get more people's eyes focused on the comic books. I've never seen or heard anyone talk about that with relation to this video game, but this video game feels absolutely like it's one of those things where you can enjoy the video game and really start learning about all of these details on the X-Men and want to find out further adventures. Like, you know, I could absolutely see somebody who's like, oh, I really like playing as Wolverine in this, or oh, I want to know more about Gambit and looking up comics on them. It works. Like, the storyline, because of how it's focused on a new X-Men coming in and a new trainee, it just unfolds beautifully as here is the introduction to this X-Men universe. We're going to assume you don't know anything, and we're just going to let everything unravel in front of you. And like I said, because it nails a lot of the lore, it nails a lot of the details from the comics, you can go from this into the comics, especially the comics at that time, and you could pick them up and you'd be off to the races. Like, you would understand who these characters are and you could go. Because it's made in 2004, not as relatable to right now. I could imagine somebody playing this game and saying, hey, I really love the X-Men, and then picking up something about Krakoa and just being completely lost. But for overall, you could definitely play this game and get hooked on the X-Men. I could see that happening.
Yeah, like, the only people I can think of that I wouldn't give this game to are people who just absolutely hate the playstyle, and people who wouldn't be able to get past the fact that it's a PS2 and all the pitfalls that come with that. And really, I mean, what are you going to do about those anyway?
Yeah, it's definitely... It is what it is. It's a game that's what now 16, 17 years old. There's
no,
nothing you
not.
Can do.
Not that much time has passed.
I had to look down at my window to make sure I was doing the math there on the years, right? So it's a product of its time, but it's a good product of its time. It's one of those things that's well worth revisiting. There's a lot of games from 2004 in that era that there's no point in going back and trying and playing. This isn't one of them. This is definitely a game that I think is worth going back and taking a look at. Maybe you wouldn't actually want to sit down and invest the 20, 30 hours it would take to beat the whole game, but to goof around with it, to have some fun with some friends, it's still, there's a lot of enjoyability in it.
And it's relatively cheap. with some relatively cheap consoles that it's on. So it's not like it's a huge monetary investment to get it.
It's right where you want to be. As someone who's kind of gone back and forth with buying older games now and seeing where the prices have spiked and where they're still low, we're still in an area where most PlayStation 2 games or original Xbox games are relatively easy to get and relatively cheap. GameCube actually has started to go on the rise, I think, because so many people get back into GameCube to try to play the original Smash Brothers. GameCube prices, just for the console itself and also for games, feel like they're kind of going up, but PlayStation 2 games right now are still just dirt cheap, unless it's some rare, weird port of a game or something like that. Like, you can pick this up very, very easily. I'd be surprised if it cost you $10 on eBay.
Well, Kevin, it's been great talking to you about this. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
I'm everywhere you want to be. I'm on Twitter at Kevin Newbern, KevinNewburn. I get to see a lot of my art and rambling about comics there. And then also over on Instagram, at Nubachu, NewBachu. So you can follow me there.
And as always, we'll have links to all that stuff down in the show notes, because it's so much easier than trying to spell things.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a name that gets misspelled quite a bit, so definitely easier for a link.
And if you want to find me, easiest place is to head on over to Twitter at Play Comics Cast, where you can, I don't know, whatever I'm doing on Twitter these days, because the world is crazy. And yes, let's just leave it there. If you want to support the show and I haven't driven you off from all that craziness, head on over to playcomics.com, find the support page there, because Patreon is being a giant pain in the butt, and I may be switching out of that. We'll see. So I don't want to say go to Patreon, but Patreon will still exist because some people are going to be stuck there for reasons, and that's cool. But, you know, there'll be some options, and the Play Comics website will always be the best place to figure out what those options are. If you want to check out some other wonderfully geeky shows, you can head on over to GennaGeek.com, where you can check out all those wonderful geeky shows there. I promise other adjectives exist, but they only come out as wonderful while I'm recording this little end of the show. And if you like the music that we're rudely talking on top of right now, head on over to soundcloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, and go find yourself a new favorite character.
Hey, Chris, I think we forgot about something here.
Well, what could that have been? I'm pretty sure we covered everything.
No, you forgot about the part where you recorded this a long time ago, so you didn't ask Kevin his favorite Muppet.
Well, how do you know about that? And where are you coming from anyway?
The future, the past, I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain, don't worry about it.
I don't know.
I said don't worry about it.
Alright, so if Kevin was here and I was able to ask him his favorite Muppet, then what do you think his answer would have been?
Well, Kevin seems like a really cool dude, so probably Gonzo.
You just think everybody likes Gonzo, don't you?
No, actually, I think everybody likes either Kermit or Animal. But Kevin just seems like a Gonzo person. It'd be something about doing whatever you want, not even worrying about what people think of you about it, and, you know, definitely liking chickens.
Dude, chickens are freaky.